Okay, so the first thing goes like this. Last week I was leaving YU, pulled out of the lot, made my left onto Amsterdam Avenue, got to the corner. There's this blue car waiting to make a left onto 181st Street, probably heading onto the crosswalk. And this white sedan pulls around this blue car, cuts him off as the light turns, and is right in front of this blue car now. I'm turning first. Saw this and I was like, wow, that was close. Because a couple of days before, I actually saw someone sideswipe someone else on a side street that probably thought that she was over far enough. But she wasn't. But this guy just decided to cut off the blue car. So the blue car pulls out, goes in onto the side of the white car, and as soon as the light changes, tries to cut off the white car. I said to myself, I better get out of the way. The white car said, he's going straight. He's not letting this blue car back and cut him off. It was like this epic battle. You're not going to cut me off. I'm going to cut you. I'm going to cut you. No. Anyway, it was this very interesting battle. Little did I realize at the time how much it had to do with the parasha. We mentioned last week that it says, V'sadu libchem, that Avram Avinu gives them carbs, because carbs satiate the heart. We spoke about how libchem is not levavchem. That by way says, v'haftas shem lekecha v'chol levavcha, means all your hearts. And so Rashi said over there, because by the malachim, the Yetzer Hara is not shalit. The Yetzer Hara doesn't control malachim. So they only have one heart. Hearts means Yetzer Tov, Yetzer Hara. V'haftas shem lekecha v'chol levavcha, zokt Rashi an shema. Rashi says, because we're supposed to serve the Kaddish Baruch with both of our hearts. But Malachim only have one heart. Why does Rashi say only one heart? Because it says, Sadu libchem, not levavchem. So you see from here, that says Rashi, his language was, the Yetzer is not shalit by Malachim. So we were medayik, if you remember, that the Yetzer isn't shalit, means the Yetzer doesn't control them. It doesn't mean they don't have one. So it sounds like Malachim have some kind of Yetzer around, but doesn't control them. Why doesn't it control them? Pashut Pshat, because in Shamayim, consequences of everything are so clear. We also have free will to jump into a fire and to do all kinds of crazy things ourselves, but no one would ever do it because we know we're going to die. So we don't do it. Free will. But that's not really free will, is it? That's how you look at it. Technically it is. So the Yetzer is not shalit by Malachim, but they exist. They know they exist. They have an independent existence. So that comes along with some degree of Yetzer Hara. Just like Adam HaRishon before the Yetzer Hara became part of him. So did a Malach ever do it on Vayera? Where? In Parshas Vayera. Do you see a Malach doing on Vayera? Bereishis is hinted to by the Nephilim that there was this Uzzah and Azazel.
What about the trees that didn't produce fruit?
Trees, right? That's an interesting thing. Like inanimate objects seeming that I'm not listening to the Eitz Pri. The Eitz did not taste like the Pri. It's also interesting. So in Vayera, the interesting, Rashi has some interesting comments. The Malachim go to stone. And what's the sequence of events? The Malachim show up there, and Lod invites them in. He has no idea that they're Malachim, right? He's just doing Hakhnas Azorkim. Yeah, they try to say no. And he insists, but you should wash their feet only afterwards, not first. Looks like they didn't stay so long. Yeah, take a convoluted way to his house. So they spoke about Sodom. According to Rashi, they had some conversations about Sodom, not such great people or whatever. But the Malachim didn't say a word about what they're doing there. What happens while they're there? All the people from Sodom come and say, we'd like to get to know these guys a little better. So Lot says, no, take my daughters instead, don't take the guests, you know, whatever he says. So then the Malachim stick their hands out or whatever, they blind everyone in the doorway, and that's when they tell Lot that we're going to destroy this place. So it's in Yud Tes Yud Gimel, Ki Mashchisim Anachnu Es HaMokom Hazeh. Mashchisim Anachnu translates into what?
We are
destroying Es HaMokom Hazeh, this place. And then there's a pause, the Kama Nisnachta. Ki Gad Lo Tzakasam Es Pnei Hashem. Because there are screams, there are cries, maybe because of what they did to other people's cries, but whatever, these cries have become so great before Hashem. Veshalcheinu, Hashem sent us, l'shachasa, to destroy it. So it's interesting. Ki mashchisim anachnu es hamakom hazeh. We're destroying this place. Why are we destroying this place? Because their cries become so great before Hashem that Hashem sent us to destroy it. Anything strike you about that pasuk?
It says it. There's five cities, five towns.
What about?
It says it. Mishchak.
Hamakom hazeh. So okay, So that's the sequence of events. They only tell Lot that they're going to destroy this place, and that's the shluchim of Hashem, by the way. After this whole episode with the attack on them in Lot's house, okay, and then everything happens, and Lot wants to run away. He wants to go to Tzoar. So Lot is like haggling with them where he's going to go. If I found favor in your eyes, if you like me a little bit, So, I can't go to the mountains. I'm afraid I'm going to die. Let me go to this place called Tzoar and stay there. So they say to him, okay, we won't destroy the city that you want to run away to. Hurry and run away there. Why? I can't do anything. Say we. This one is I. I can't do anything until you get there. What means trying to pressure him, want him to run faster? There's like an anxiety in the words of the Malach. Hurry up! We're wasting our time. No? I can't do anything until you get there, so hurry up. It's a little strange. If you want to tell him to hurry, so you say, Maher Himalait, hurry up, that he says in the beginning. Maher Himalait Shama. But he adds, the reason why I'm telling you to rush is because Kilo Uchala says to Avrad Boy Chasham. I can't do anything until you get there. Rashi on that pasuk. Zeh Oin Shon Shel Malachim. This is the punishment to the Malachim. Punishment to Malachim? Al Sha'amru Ki Mashchisim Anachnu. Because they said, we are destroying the city. They made it sound like they're doing it themselves. Therefore, they couldn't move from there until they were forced to say, it's not in their control. Yeah? So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that story? The story goes that there was a certain chassid, they say Berzush or whatever, but there's a chassid, he went to the rabbi, and he got to the rabbi's door, and he knocks on the door. So the rabbi says, who is it? So he says, it's me. It's I. So the Rebbe says, who? So he says, it's me. So he opens the door and says, oh, hi, so-and-so. Come on. He stays there. However much time he stayed. On the way back, he gets attacked by bandits. And the bandits accuse him of stealing whatever it was. And he said, I didn't deny it. It wasn't me. Not me. Not I. So they start beating him. And he keeps screaming out again and again. Not me! Not me! Not me! Bang, 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 not me. Anyway, at some point he makes it back to the Rebbe. And he asks the Rebbe, why did this happen to me? He says, when you knocked on my door, who did you say it was? He says, it's me. So they made you say, not me, not me, not me, not me, not me. Sometimes we look at ourselves, we're like, Hine, Anochi, it's me. You're like, who are you? You should know who I am. It's me. So don't look at yourself, it's such a guy with me. It's me. Who are you? So they made him beat him down until he lost his sense of arrogance in his eye, So here's the Malachim that I'm destroying this place. So Hashem says, you're going to have to admit that it's not you that's doing it. That was their punishment, says Rashi.
Weren't they set to do that?
Yeah. But they couldn't take credit for it. They were saying it was them. Ki mashchisim anachnu. We are destroying. They're not destroying the place. They're just doing whatever they need to do for Hashem to destroy it.
What were their two jobs?
To destroy stone.
Well, one of them had a job to destroy stone.
Yeah, it's his job, destroy stone. No.
What was the other one's job?
To save Lot. That may or may not have been the same thing as the refuah. He may be the same Malach that heals Abram, saving Lot, maybe not. Whatever. Anyway, so Rav Schwab in Mayim Beis HaShoeva, he asks a couple of questions. He says, if you look carefully at that pasuk where they're being criticized of their arrogance. Did you notice it in the same pasuk? It says, because a Kaddish Baruch Hu sent us to do it. It says, כי משחיסים אנחנו את המקום הזה, כי גדל הצעק עשה אמס פני השם, וישלחנו השם לשעק עשה. Hashem sent us, it is true. They say in the same pasuk, they're being criticized for their arrogance in the same pasuk. They said it with the Shluchi Hashem. You hear the question? Adam, you hear the question?
Yeah, they sent by Hashem.
What have they been criticized for doing?
For saying that they were destroyed.
For taking credit for it, right? I'm destroying Sodom. But in the same pasuk that they said, we are destroying Sodom, they add, because Hashem sent us to do it.
So you're admitting that there's something.
What?
So you're taking out of context.
Yeah.
You're just taking one sentence
that they said. Yeah, it's not fair. You know, they didn't take credit. They only took credit as the Shluchim of Hashem. What's going on? That's question number one. Question number two is a question from a Medrash. There's a Medrash that says that these Malachim were punished and they weren't allowed back to Shamayim for 138 years. When were they allowed back into Shemayim? When Yaakov Avinu, after whatever happened to him, he goes to the Makom, future Makom HaMikdash, he falls asleep and he has his dream. And what does he see in the dream? V'hine malachei elikim oylim v'yordim boy. There were malachim going up and going down. And everybody asks the question, malachim were going which direction? Up and down. Don't you have to come down first? Who are these malachim going up before they came down? Oh, says the Medrash. These malachim. It was these malachim that were punished. They weren't allowed to go back to Shemayim until that point.
So they had to like pretend to be human for 100 years?
Yes, everybody wants to make this. Weren't they gaining weight? You know, like, that's going to die. Like, what's Shemayim? Okay, so I don't know that. I don't know the answer. But it's interesting. That's what the Medrash answers. So Rav Schwab wants to know, so what changed? It sounds like that was the limit. After that time, they were able to go. Why? What changed? It must have been they learned their lesson, right? That they were fixed their chisarim. What do you mean? They did it right here. They admitted that it wasn't us. It's Hashem. Why isn't that enough? What's going on over here? So this is what he says. And this goes back to road rage. That's what it has to do with this week's parsha. Last week's parsha. When did the malachim tell Lot that they're going to destroy this place? After they were personally insulted. Yeah? People from Sodom come and they say, bring him out of here. We want to have some fun with him. The Malachim say, us? Are you for real? Us? A chutzpah. I'm a Malach Hashem. What are you talking about? Says Rosh Hashanah, they were personally insulted. Personally insulted. A chutzpah. What's that? That's a result. Now let's focus on that for a minute. What's wrong with that? Normal, right? Very normal. Very normal for a person.
Perfect for a person.
So what's the chisaron there?
That they're listening to their
what's it called?
Listen to their
Yitzhar. What's the Yitzhar? They were insulted. Gaiva. Makes sense. Gaiva. What's the Gaiva there?
That they think that they're better than humans.
Maybe they are.
Yeah, I mean they are, but I don't know. So they were insulted because what?
Because the people from Stone were saying we would like to create a new thing called sodomy in Sodom. You'll be our first, you know, contestant.
That was my first contestant.
Okay, probably not. But after all, it was called Stone after all, yeah?
Stone was the angel's contest.
They were like, I don't know if humiliated is the right word. They were angry. They were angry that was even like a thought process. Like, hey, do you know who I am? So when you zero in on that, it really goes back to this idea that the Torah says they're not allowed to bear a grudge. Taking revenge is an action. But what does it mean? How can a Kaddish Baruch Hu say not allowed to bear a grudge? The person insulted me. The person hurt me. I can't. I feel animosity towards them. I feel upset. How can I not feel upset? So Sefer HaChinuch, others, so they argue that, you know, the famous mashal they give is like, person is training his dog. So the dog doesn't do the right thing. So the trainer hits the dog with a stick. The dog gets all mad at the stick. Grabs the stick and it bites the stick and starts shaking the stick. Because it thinks the stick is the thing that's hurting it. But it's not the stick that's beating the dog. It's the trainer. So how come he doesn't get upset at the trainer? Yes, he doesn't even understand it's coming from the trainer. He just sees the direct weapon the stick. So too by us. When the Torah says the kid shouldn't bear a grudge, not allowed to bear a grudge, the grudge is a feeling of being upset at the tool in Hashem's hand. If we really were able to perceive the world correctly, so we would know that it's not that person that's hurting me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put me in that situation. Let's take this guy that got cut off on Amsterdam Avenue. So he got cut off. So what's he supposed to do? So this guy got mad. He cut me off. I can't believe it. Me! He cut me off! I'm going to cut him off. What are you so upset about? So upset about? Terry says, I got personally insulted. Because I am who I am. How could this person do that to me? What's a person supposed to be thinking? Ooh. That upsets me. Why does that upset me? Why am I so upset about it? Maybe I have too much arrogance. It's like, I cut off, okay. Maybe that's all part of Hashem's plan, you know? It is all part of Hashem's plan. It's part of Hashem's plan to delay me a few minutes and I'll make the light. It's part of Hashem's plan because it's supposed to teach me midos and to be calm and to let other people be crazy. I think it was Rav Lachman that once said that anger is self-affliction for someone else's stupidity. So everything that happens to us is because a Kaddish Baruch Hu is teaching us lessons. He's the master educator. So to get upset at the tool that a Kaddish Baruch Hu used, totally misplaced. You want to get upset at a Kaddish Baruch Hu? Go for it. But that doesn't make any sense. So that's the idea of not bearing a grudge. So what happened over here? When the Malachim are in Shemayim, it's very clear that everything that happens is totally Minashamayim. Everything is in Shemayim. Everything's clear. It's a Kaddish Baruch Hu's plan. There's no sveikos. There's no doubts. It's very clear. It's very clear that. They look down Baritz, Minashamayim. Everything's very clear. Problem is, they came to the world. So when they came to the world, so they were affected by the world. How did the world affect them? They started to feel that arrogance. They started to feel that sense of, it's not so clear. It's not so clear that this is what Kaddish Baruch Hu is doing. It's not so clear for two reasons. It's not so clear, number one, because it's just not clear. You don't see Hashem's hand in everything that happens in the world. It's not clear. But the bigger problem is, people have bechira. People have free will. The guy in the white sedan chose to cut me off.
Well, theoretically don't, though.
They theoretically do. It's just so clear to them, though. Why would they go against Hashem? It doesn't make any sense. But they could. So here it came out, because of the lack of clarity. They're in the world now. So in the world, with the lack of clarity, for two reasons. Number one, it's just not clear what Hashem does. You don't see it clearly. But the bigger problem, what?
Shouldn't Malachim be able to see it?
The bigger problem is that this is a result of Bechira. These people in Sdom chose to do this.
If you are, like, you know,
a person. But think about what's the problem? The problem is, how does Bechira work? I can choose to do what Hashem didn't want to happen. So Hashem is going to let me choose. It doesn't mean that I'll be able to act on it. It doesn't mean that I'll be able to do whatever I want to do. But it does mean I can make the choice to try. So if a Kaddish Baruch Hu decided to allow my choice to come to its fruition, so then a Kaddish Baruch Hu is interested in the result. Sometimes a Kaddish Baruch Hu is not interested in the result. Let's say the white sedan wanted to cut off the blue car. And a Kaddish Baruch Hu says, you are not cutting that guy off. He needs to make the light. He needs to do this. He needs to. He doesn't deserve. Yeah, you know. It happened to me. I was driving up that hill on my way back from this blueberry picking near Monroe. And I pushed the gas down. Nothing. The whole car shuts off. Oh, well. Bye-bye, gas pump. That's it. There's so many things that can happen in life that prevent a person from doing what they want to do. So a person makes choices. It doesn't mean that Hashem is going to allow the choices to come to their fruition and affect other people. So if it affected the other person, the other person has to have the perception that, okay, this happened to me for a reason. I'm not going to get mad at him. He's just a commandeered vehicle by Hashem.
Is it an important lesson in New York when everyone
is? I remember one time I called up whatever phone company was about some issue. And the woman answered the phone and she was like, hello! Like, hi. I'm like, yeah, what's your problem? You know, it was like, she was very, like, very rough with me. And I sort of stopped and I said, are you okay? She says, what? I'm a Jeff Ruff day. I said, why? I don't know. You sound like you're upset. She's like, oh, I'm okay. I'm sorry. We had a great conversation after that. You know? But like, whatever. So, have to be...
Have you ever called Charles through it?
I don't think so.
And like, bars of treasure and we're like, hugging.
Yeah?
And it's like a British company.
Yeah, sure.
Very British. So yeah, you call the number, I think.
Hello, how can I help you? Oh, brilliant, brilliant.
It was the most British conversation I've ever had in my entire life.
That's out of town, huh? Anyway. So here you have Bechira that gets in the way. Because Bechira confounds things more than just how confounding the world is. The fact that it's not clear what a Kaddish Baruch is doing in the world is compounded by the fact that people make choices. If that's a person's choice, that's not Hashem doing it, it's his decision. But that's not true. A person makes his decision, and then a Kaddish Baruch either allows them to happen or doesn't allow them to happen. And if he does allow it to happen, it's because he's commandeering their choices for his purposes. So that is the mistake that the Malachim made.
Wait, so what?
They were impacted by...
What brought them back?
So yeah, hold on a second. So when... The reason that they tell Lot that they're destroying the city... So let's answer the question. The first question was, but the Pasuk itself says that they're Shluchim of Hashem. So Rishwa points out that there's an Asnachta here. And Asnachta is the upside down wishbone, yeah? That wishbone trub means a comma, means a pause. So let's say if you have the word geshem by an esnachta, it'll become goshem. It's a pause, yeah? So here, it's an independent statement. He says because they got upset. They got offended. They had a sense of self that was in the way now. Because how could they do this to us? So they needed to fix it. How did they fix it? So the Medrash says, when Yaakov Avinu came to the future place of Beis HaMikdash, he came empty-handed. You remember why he came empty-handed?
His nephew stole everything.
Esau's son Eliphaz came and said, I have a problem. Tati told me to kill you.
But I know you're a big tzaddik and I don't want to kill the big tzaddik. What do I do?
So he says, well, I'll tell you. We can solve both problems. You can listen to your father and kill me at the same time. How do you do that? By taking all my possessions, I'll become poor. And an ani, chashav kemes, is considered dead. So you take away everything I own, I'll be poor, and I'll be dead. And you'll fulfill both. So he says, great. Very funny conversation. Rechaim Shmulevitz says a little piece on this. What kind of bizarre thought process is this? If your father tells you to kill somebody, you don't listen to him. You don't have to listen to Kibbutz Avim to kill somebody. It doesn't make any sense. Especially if it's a tzaddik. So he says, or Koshech Mishtamshim Birbuvi, that's where people are, they're just all mixed up, and there's all kinds of different cheshbonos, and people don't do the right. Anyway, but whatever it is. So he was poor, very poor, and like dead. And how? What was his response? Yaakov Avinu. I don't know, seems to be fine with it. This is like a Kadosh Baruch Hu's plan. Whatever it is, this is what's supposed to be.
Can I have
lots of malachs? Yeah, whatever. So the malachim, this malach, sees this. He says, really? For real? He says, a human being can have that perception? Despite Bechira Chafshas, even in spite of free will, that Eliphaz comes with his own free will, says, I'm going to kill you, and Yaakov says, eh, do this. And he's okay with that. This is all Min HaShemayim. That's Yaakovina's perception. Everything that happens is Min HaShemayim. Free will notwithstanding. Okay, I get it. And that was the tikkun to the Malach. Not to have to admit that he can't do it. But to see a human being who can really see the world that way, that was the full tikkun to the Malach. So that's why Yaakov when you saw Malach El Elihim, Oilim, Veyordim, but we're going up and then coming down. Who are the ones coming down? Okay, I don't know. Maybe they were ones to escort him to Chutzlaritz, whatever they are. But the Malachim going up says this Medrash, there are other Midrash, but this Medrash says that it was that Malach that was 138 years later, that was his tikkun. When it really came to when a person, a human being, was able to really perceive HaKadosh Baruch Hu so much, not only the lack of clarity in the world, but compounded by the fact that there's Bechira, but that doesn't make a difference. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still doing what he needs to do, and he commandeers people's choices for his purposes.
What were they doing?
I don't know. Hopefully they're learning in yeshiva somewhere.
Nobody noticed
it. I don't know. Maybe they aged because that's the Minigah Olam, what can I tell you? Keep the Minigah Olam. Physics Parsha is Chayisar. So, the beginning of the Parsha is about Kavura. And there's so many psukim about burying Sarah and the whole haggling between Avram Avinu and Ephron. It's a little strange, you know? What's with all this haggling? So, one thing that's just so fascinating. What would you say are the most controversial locations in the world today? What are the most controversial? Who owns them? What are the most controversial locations?
The entire city.
Yeah, okay, well, that's one. Harabais. Harabais. Maras
Machpelah. Just Yitzchak. Right? Why did they just have Yitzchak?
What?
They just have Yitzchak, right?
Who?
There.
What do you mean?
Like, they only have access to the
Yitzchak
part.
Oh, I don't know. Politics, I don't know, whatever. Yeah, I've heard weird things about it. I don't know.
I've been.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's wild. I love
Yitzchak.
It's cool.
It's
a wild place.
This is a big chavis. This is the big chavis. So, it's crazy that the places that Chumash, Tanakh, tells us that Jews spent money on, full price, to buy, are the most controversial places. David Amel pays for the Makom HaMikdash. Avraham Avinu pays for the Maras HaMachpelah. These are two of the places that are biggest controversy. Who owns them?
It's crazy. The whole part, that was when Shalom bought it because the plague stopped there. Right?
You're talking about the times of David Amel, the end of...
David,
when he buys the Makom HaMikdash?
Wasn't there like some bit at the end of Malchim and it was like a big plague, and then I stopped like, right there, and David bought that place.
Yeah.
Well, you know, someone has to, and you know, a lot of people who it's only controversial to Westerners who think that they're just trying to, they just want peace, and who's to say, and they view that both Islam and Judaism are equally as subjectively, well, who's to say that they hope that they're both made up fantasies and faiths, and therefore that no claim is equally more valid than the other, according to the people who say it's controversial. But
when Moshiach comes, it will be clear. Okay, but it's ironic, no? It's very ironic. Very ironic.
It is ironic.
Was that not the same?
Hmm? Yeah,
it was the same. What's the same?
Shalom Bayis. I mean, this is my summary from last year. Hashem was angry. He told the count the Jews. The Navi God comes to ask him if he wants either 7 years of famine, 3 months of pursuit from enemies, or 3 days of pestilence. And he chose the pestilence, and 70,000 people died. And then the Malach, I was killing everyone, wasn't even allowed to cut his arms, stopped in the house of Arona.
Arona, yeah.
And
they
went to buy his land
for
him to reset up his job.
Right, that's it.
Is that
the Makom HaMikdash? Mm-hmm. And it says that Rashi actually quotes with Kesef Malay. Kesef Malay, same lashon that he uses by Avraham Avinu. And the irony is that those are the two most controversial places. Okay, in any case, that's just strange. So why, what's with so many details, why is this such a focus of the parsha? So I want to share an interesting Malbim with you. The Malbim... See, he says that there's a lot of ink, a lot of ink on this. What's the pshat? L'lamed chashakol mishu mevara mekhe shal tzadik ilu kiyam aseres adibris. And whoever validates the sale of a tzadik, it's like he's mekayim the aseres adibros. Kimash ha'aricha ha'terah v'kniya zu v'prateh. The fact that the terah spent so much time on this acquisition, all the details, is because Avraham Avinu tried very hard with all of this to implant in the hearts of the nations Pina Gedolah and Pina Sadas, a cornerstone of true religion, true belief. What's the cornerstone? Shehi ha'emuna b'hasharas ha'nefesh achar ha'maves, that the soul continues after the death of the body. V'gmul ha'asid, and there's going to be reward in the future, olam haba, between the nefesh and the guf, because gam ha'guvim yeshenei admas afar, What's the point in burying the body? That's what he's getting at. Because the person buries the body because it's storing it away for later. Yakitzu b'yom ha'din ha'gadol. And the body will arise in the day of the great judgment. El chaye olam ve'ila duran olam v'asidim tzadikim sh'yamdu b'vushayhem ha'inu b'gufim ha'gashmiyim. And the tzadikim will arise again with their bodies sh'yilavushim b'hem b'chayim rishonim, that they were living with in their first lives, original lives. So, for sure, especially for a tzaddik, you have to choose a burial place that's a choice location. Among other people who are his family, among tzaddikim.
Does this mean it's also saying that non-Jews should bury there?
Not so simple. But that's the concept of burial. I wondered about this a lot when I hear people talking about what to do with their dead dogs. You know? Well, it's interesting, just to take a step back for a minute. Why would anybody bury a dead body? So the answer is, well, because they're going to rot and they're going to stink. And it's not nice to just like toss a body in like a garbage dump, you know? Well, burning it up sounds like a good idea. But then they're not here anymore. They're dead anyway. You need to keep the body around so that it can spread disease? Burn it. I don't know. Sounds like a nice thing to do. Why would you bury someone? So, because that's just the most practical thing, maybe. Mm-hmm. You don't bury a Russia next to a tzaddik. Fine.
But how does that work also? It needs to be like a wooden thing.
Well, the idea of the wood, of the coffin being wood. And first of all, they don't use coffins anyhow. But in the places where they do use coffins, it's supposed to be made out of wood because something that'll biodegrade.
But then in America, don't we have like cement blocks?
Okay, so there are certain places where it is problematic. There are certain places where they call them vaults, where they have a very high water level, and so it's a problem to bury the bodies without a vault. So they make these cement vaults in the ground, so it's a little bit problematic. So those places where there's really no option, so they put, a lot of dirt in, and so there's dirt along with it, and so they're still turning into the dirt, and like, you know. But it's discussed in the post-game. It's not an ideal situation. Most places are not like that. It's like that in Florida. It's like that in certain places where the water levels are very high. But although this idea of burying someone was very unusual for B'nai Ches, because they had no concept of people coming back to life. There was no resurrection. There's certainly no more judgment after a person dies.
What's Sheol?
The next world. A netherland. Hell. Burial is only a temporary thing for now. Because you don't want to degrade the person's body, you know, denigrate it. You want to treat a person nice after he dies.
Do non-Jews resurrect? Are non-Jews resurrected?
So there are those we can talk about at the time. How much, you know, how much shaychus they have to the next world, and to the extent that they connect to the Jewish people and support the Jewish people, how much they'll be connected to that. But the bottom line is, it's only to whatever extent that they were connected to Klal Yisrael, so will there be any sort of future reward? But it's a whole, that's the Ashir. And from a practical perspective, it's because the body's rat. But what they traditionally would do is they would put the body in a situation where it would decompose properly, you know, respectfully, and then they would get rid of it. You know, dispose of it. This incident with Avram Avinu and what he was trying to do in a very public way. Like, why didn't he, like, why are you going to send a message? And he's like, he comes into like the middle of the thing. Hey, I got to talk to everyone about burying my wife. I'd like to purchase the Maris HaMak Pleder from him. Does anybody know his number? You know, like, why don't you like keep it quiet? You know, he apparently wanted this to be like a very clear message to people what he was doing. Well, you might say this, I have a piercing. For Avram Nassan, Ba'adam Ma'ara, Hain Rav. He spent a lot of money on this. And he seems to insist on spending a lot of money.
Doesn't Avram steal a lot of money from him?
Yeah, Avram Avinu says, how about this? And everyone starts off saying, oh, come on, between us, it's free, you know, we're friends, you know, I want to help you out. And Avram's like, I want to buy it. I want to pay full price. So everyone's like, full price, all right, we'll pay full price. Not only are we going to pay full price, we'll pay it in the money that's what's called oiver la soicher, which means money that you can spend in any location. because there were certain monies, coins, whatever, that were like local, and there were certain things that were, so to speak, more expensive coins, because those you could take anywhere and spend them wherever you went. Whatever these things is, yes, whatever it is. But the idea is that these coins were, the price ended up actually being higher because the coins with which he was paying the rate was the coins that you could spend anywhere.
I also remember from like when I was a kid, if I like Will Ledger says, like every time he like turned around to like get more money, like they would like take, like put out more rocks or whatever, so like...
But yeah, once he agreed to spend the full amount, not only did he stop at the full amount in local coins, but it had to be even in the most expensive coins. But the point is, Avram was willing to pay that. He wanted to make sure to send the message that this is really important. Why? Because he wanted to be nisyasid et ha-memuna. Shabar lehem, shahashleimim en lehem minu lamazeh, eladal et amas shal kavura. That the people that are shalim in this world, so what's left of the body is, you know, these four amos, where you bury a person. This world is, you know, it is what it is. Physicality that rots and ends. That's why he makes reference to the fact he's both a ger and a toshav. Those are seemingly opposites. A ger means a person that's just visiting temporarily, a stranger. The toshav means a person that lives there. He says, ger v'toshav anachi, shumachuvan, imashakasu giger anachi, imachat toshav, kecholav isai. In an immediate sense, of course, the way we read it is that he's saying, I come from far away, and I'm not really here as a ger. I'm only here as a ger. I'm a stranger amongst you. I'm not from your people. But I'm also here living because I'm also a toshav. So why would you say both? So the Malbim says, Ki chaya le mazehim chaya ya ger. He's trying to say that I have two components to me. I'm both a ger and a toshav. How are you both a ger and a toshav? Because on the one hand, my body is just a ger. The body is going to last a certain amount of time. Shal mekom ha-shayef ezrach husham. V'kein tenu li achuzas kever. V'mash ekvara meisi hurak milafonai.
Like the badly translated of the Bible verse.
What?
Ger v'toshav is like, it's like King James, and like, you know, horrible kind of translating.
Really? So Avrinu says both because he's trying to point out that the person has two components. There's the body, which is a ger, and there's a neshama, which is a toshav, and it exists forever. It doesn't go away. And that's why he says, "Ve'ek barua es meisi milfonai." I'm going to bury my mace from before me. What do you mean from before you? Bury the dead. Bury my mace. What's from before me as opposed to where? So the Malbim explains, Umasha ekra meisi hurak milfanai, because the fact that I'm burying her is only from in front of me, but she's still here. Aval be'emes leisei chashiv lekavura, it's not like a complete burial. Rakamisha goine is davar yakar, but oitzar, it's like a person that's storing away something else. Liyos shamur lemoed yadua, just to be accessible at a later date. So yes, yomishamur is going to take it out. It's a savings account. Ubenei cheis ashaloi ha'aminu bozeh. But the Bnei Ches, they didn't believe in any of this stuff. They were happy to just bury something until it decomposes, and then who cares? So they say, yeah, so, you know, put your dead body in whatever place and go on with your life. Like, why would you want to purchase it and keep it? You want a place to bury the dead, right? So we'll allow you to bury her over here. Let her body rot in a respectful way and go on your merry way. Why would you want to purchase the location? Because he wanted for the future? What do you need it for the future? Well, for the next dead body? We'll let you put that one there too, no problem. What do you need to buy it for? It doesn't make any sense. Why would you want to own a burial place? So he wants not only a burial place, he wants to purchase a burial place. In addition, he wants specifically this double cave. Shahayabayas va'aliyah. Because I'll have different approaches to this. Rashi quotes different approaches. But the Malbim says that one angle in Chazal is that it was called a double cave because it had an upstairs and a downstairs. That was an illustration and a metaphor. Because a person in this world is very much like that. Then on the one hand, there's a lower level of the cave. But there's another place above it, which is the next world, the higher world. So after death, a person also, you put the body, you know, to rest. And the spirit rests upon it above. The Gan Eden HaTachtoin, what it refers to as the lower Gan Eden. He says, I speak about this elsewhere in Shirshir. This cave is specifically at the corner, at the edge of the field. Because it means it's the end of the life of the person. And he wants to say, I'll buy it full price. Then he talks about Kabbalah over here, so we'll skip that. That's what Avraham Avinu was trying to clarify to them. He was trying to instill within everybody belief in what it really means to be alive and to have Olam Haba. In his time, there wasn't like a Jewish people like we have now. He was trying to bring people in. And whoever ultimately would connect with him, theoretically, could become, you know, the next Yidden. It's very similar, that's what he started with, this idea, this Medrash, that it's like the Aseres HaDibrais, because that was a clarification of all the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu exists, and that there's reward and punishment. And that was a big part of the Aseres HaDibrais. So one who understands what Avraham Avinu was trying to do, understands that this was a moment of sort of like revelation of Hashem Har Sinai, the importance of what it means that there's a HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that the world, the life goes on in the neshama, and there's a body, and all these kinds of things. So that is the Malbim's angle on the significance of why we spend so much time, energy, ink on all of these psukim. What is going on? Why is Avraham Avinu so focused on it? Why does it have to be so public? What is the big deal about purchasing a burial place? So that's what he says, is that he wanted everyone to understand that it means a body and there's a neshama, and that it's not just that you let the body decay and that's the end of the person, but you purchase a place where a person is buried because it's just a storehouse for later. But this just really does go to Becca's question about, is it really, let's say, appropriate to bury an animal, to do something like that? Is it really like a mistake? So you could say no, because you're just burying it, but you're not purchasing a burial place. Okay, so what about that? What about purchasing a spy, what do you call it, a plot in a pet cemetery? So maybe that should be like a real, you know, not like an isser, but like a mistake. Like a lost sense of what really means kavura, what it means to bury someone, and the message that it means, that it gets across, and all that.
So we're just stopping burying it
when we run? I mean, as a practicality, if that's the most practical thing to do, so, you know. But the concept behind it is that it's storing something away for later. We lose it a little bit, because nowadays, if that's what we're really doing, so leave the body in the morgue. You know what I mean? Like, we'll just get some carbonite. Just like do something to preserve the body, like Walt Disney, until it's time for Tchias HaMeisim.
He was freezer.
Yeah. So we don't do that. And the mitzvah is burial. Why is that? I don't know. Maybe just because that's the way it always was. There are a few components here. One component is that back then, that is how things were preserved. Refrigerators back then were just things that were underground, because that's how you kept things cold and you preserved them for as long as they could. So they used to, you know, bury vegetables, not to regrow them, but to keep them fresh, you know. And then people that had eventually that ice boxes and whatever. But there are more elements to it than that, because there is this idea that people have to decompose, and that's part of the reconstitution of the body for Tchias HaMeisim. It's important that there be decomposition. So this idea that maybe we should just nowadays freeze somebody, because that makes more sense based on this idea that we're just waiting to store them away for the person to come back, it's not really true. It's missing a very important element of it. So, for example, this, fascinatingly enough, it comes up, halach l'maisa, that if you take a look at Shacharach, take a look at Mishnah Berurah, Motzei Shabbos was to have a Malava Malka. So Mishnah Berurah, they quotes this, that the Malava Malka feeds this bone in our body called the Luz, or whatever the name is. And that bone only gets nourishment from a Malava Malka. You heard this before? Bone only gets nourishment from Malava Malka. What's the significance of that? Because that's where Tchias HaMesim is going to start from. Why is Tchias HaMesim going to start from that bone? Because that bone wasn't impacted by eating from the Eitz HaDaas. Because since that bone only gets nourishment from Malav Malka, however that works, and the Eitz HaDaas was not a Malav Malka Suda, so that means that that bone didn't get any nourishment from the Eitz HaDaas. Once they ate from the Eitz HaDaas, the Kadosh Baruch Hu says, Ki b'yom achoch mimenu mos tamus, the day you eat from that tree, you're going to die. But they didn't die the day they ate from the tree. But Hashem said, the day you eat from, you're going to die. So what's Pshat? So the Ramban and Mepharshim explain that it means that they weren't going to die on the spot. It wasn't a capital crime. It means that now you're going to have to die eventually. Why? Because since the Eitz HaDaas became part of their physicality, so it had to be removed from them physically for them to regain the level before the Chet. So the body has to decompose. Except for any part of the body that didn't get any nourishment from the Eitz HaDaas. So the Luz, it only gets nourishment from a Malav Malka that didn't have any Eitz HaDaas in it. So that bone never decomposes. So that bone is where Tchias HaMesim starts from and allows the reconstitution of the body that we should be back on a level Adam Rishon Kodem Achim. So it seems like decomposition is of significance. However, there do seem to be tzaddikim that never decomposed. And the Gemara does have this story, I forgot if it was Rab or something like that. His workers were in the field and they found this dead body, and you know, it was like talking to them or something. So the Rav comes to it and says, how come you didn't decompose? And he says to him, didn't you learn Mishlei? You don't know Psukim. It says, Berekev Atzamo is kina. That what causes the bones to rot is jealousy. But I was a tzaddik and I never had any jealousy in my life, so my bones didn't ever rot. I don't have to rot. Rot is only because of kina in the bones. So according to that, sounds like nobody can get out of death. Death seems to be necessary. So a few people maybe never even died. Maybe they were able to really fix themselves completely. Eliyahu HaNavi never died. Okay. Well, everybody did die. Yeah. Bar Levi, according to the Gemara, never died. There are a few examples like this, few and far between. But the Malach HaMavet, by killing someone, so that's what ultimately has to happen to everyone. Because of the original Nachash, because of the whole episode with the Nachash, everyone has to die. Decomposition may be because of other factors. So it's an interesting thing. But be that as it may, those are some of the interesting yisodos behind Kfura and the fact that Terry spent so much time on it over here.